You want to start the recording and list the names of the people who are on the call, please?
Okay. Just as a reminder, the conference call is being recorded. We have Robin Gross, Amir Al-Sader, Avery Soria, David Cake, Bill Drake, Marjorie Bazzello, Glenn McKnight, Kathy Kleeman, Edward Morris, and then we have, I'm not sure what the first name is, but the last name, Rudy.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Hi, everyone. This is Robin Gross, and this is the meeting of the non-commercial stakeholder group, and thank you all for joining. I apologize we're getting started a couple minutes late. We had some issues there with our Adobe Connect and such, but I think we've got that sorted now. So why don't we, I'll quickly go through the agenda and see if anyone has any questions or anything else to add before we get started. First, we can prepare for the GNSO Council meeting on Thursday of this week. Looks like there's two motions up for a vote by Council: the initiation of a policy development process on the intra-registered transfer policy, Part D, and also the approval of its charter. And then there are also a number of discussion items on the Council agenda that don't have a vote but are up for discussion and pretty important nonetheless. The first is the Trademark Clearinghouse straw man proposal and the blocking proposal from the IPCPC. Second is the GNSO response to the GAC letter about initiating a PDP on the IGO-NGO issue. Third is the issue of policy versus implementation and the role of the different members of the community and staff and setting policy and interpreting policy versus implementation. Next issue on the agenda is the ATRT2 developments, which is the Accountability and Transparency Review Team. Fifth is the WHOIS Privacy and Proxy Relay and Reveal Study. And then we have a number of issues on the agenda, discussion items that don't relate to this Thursday's meeting, but nonetheless we should talk about. The meeting of the Non-Contracted Parties House, the 29th and 30th in January, in LA. Next, the consumer trust metrics issue within the GNSO at ICANN. Next, the registrar agreement amendment negotiations. See if we can get an update on that. And finally, I'd like to remind folks to apply for an ICANN fellowship for the Durban or Buenos Aires meetings. Any other business? Okay, not hearing anything. Let's get started and dive right into it. So as far as counselors on the call today, is David the only counselor we've got on the call? Anyone, any other of our elected representatives on this call to discuss how you'll vote on Thursday? Okay, just David. Okay, David, I guess it's on you. Thank you for joining. So the issue that the council will be voting on is this issue of initiation of a policy development process on the inter-registrar transfer policy, Part D, and the approval of the charter. I think this was a motion made by Mason Cole. Do we have let me just open it up for discussion. Are there thoughts on this motion? Do people have a view on how we should vote and what the important issue is here? Anyone? David, maybe as our lone counselor on this call, you can give us your thoughts on this and Magali, how you're going to vote on Thursday.
Magali is in the Adobe Connect room. I just wanted to mention, but
okay.
I have seen nothing in the IRTPD that makes me think we shouldn't vote for it. It's been a pretty and it really isn't that big a deal to us at this stage. I think so.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same both. This is not a big deal for us, and so, you know, people might say, well, why is it the first thing on the agenda item? Because we typically have the things that are up for a motion first, just because we need to know how we're going to vote, and so, you know, it's just good to get that cleared away, but we don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but just so that it's clear. So it sounds like you're recommending that we vote yes on this, on these two motions?
I mean, this is to get a group going, and it's been bumped a couple of times from the agenda. I think we should just... Which is, I think, is the reason why it's up first. It's been bumped a couple of times previously.
Okay.
I think, if I'm remembering correctly. But anyway, I think we should vote. I see no reason why we shouldn't vote for it.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Any other views? Anybody disagree? Okay. We all agree this is not a big issue, but so let's move on. Great. Okay. So let's... that's the only issue up for a vote for council. So there are some discussion issues. And the first one is the trademark clearinghouse, straw man proposal, and the blocking proposal, and what the IPCBC calls defensive registrations. So the straw man proposal, which staff came up with based on the IPCBC's 8-point requests, is out for public comment right now. And... NCSG submitted a comment yesterday, and it's up on the website now if anyone would like to look at it. And basically, we said that we didn't want the straw man model to be enacted without sending this all back to the GNSO, that these are GNSO policy issues that need to go through proper GNSO process, and there are substantive reasons what's wrong with the proposal as well, well outside the bounds of trademark law and principles, and so we tried to lay out a lot of those reasons in the response that we drafted. And is Kathy on this call? I want to thank Kathy for helping a lot with that. And maybe, Kathy, you've got some comments on this issue as well before I go any further.
Can you hear me? I'm using
yes.
A new headset. Okay, great. Thanks so much for organizing the meeting, Robin, and for drafting the comments. Excellent comments, and thank you for incorporating the edits that came through from me, from Constantinos, from Mary. I think we will probably be joining registries and registrars in expressing concern about not only the substance of the changes that ICANN staff is proposing. I'm not sure we need more rights protection mechanisms at this point in time. What we need to do is implement the ones we've already got, and we need to implement them fully and fairly, but I don't think we need new ones, not at all, and certainly not blocking, and certainly not 50 variations of a trademark. So I would ask that our counselors read the comments closely before you go on, or just bring a copy with you so that you have it in front of you and as a great cheat sheet of concerns that we've been expressing over rights protection mechanisms, and particularly overreaching of rights protection mechanisms for a long time. And then procedurally, I know registries, registrars, and non-commercial are all concerned about the way the process took place. Personally, I urge that we not slam Fadi too much. He may have made a mistake. I think he knows he made a mistake, and I don't think he'll do it again this way. He was trying to use executive the way executives solve problems, not the way policy organizations solve problems. And again, I don't think he's going to do that again. He was just trying to get to a quick solution fast, from my perspective. We can point out the problem, but I think everyone knows there was a problem. But the big thing is, keeping the intellectual property guys back in the box that they agreed to put themselves in 2008, 2009, 2010. They agreed consensus votes on the URS and the Trademark Clearinghouse. That's enough. Does that put it in a nutshell, Robin?
Yeah, thank you very much for that. That's really helpful. And I did notice yesterday that the registrars submitted a comment to the comment forum saying largely what you just said and what we've been saying, and frankly, even in stronger words than we used. And the NTAG group also, which is the new applicant group, they also submitted a comment a couple of days ago in the forum saying much of the same things, that this is procedurally inappropriate and these are policy issues. So, we should also say that INTA, the International Trademark Association has started its campaign and encouraging its members to send in comments to the public comment forum. So, you know, there are comments from the CEO of GE and the comments from the HSBC bank, you know, the bank that just got busted for laundering a bunch of drug money, but they're not going to prosecute them because, well, that would mean jobs are on the line. So they're giving us a little lesson in the comment forum about how to behave. So basically the point is, so Intel's got a lot of their trademark holders, big companies, sending in comments urging for these extra privileges. And so I think it would be helpful if there are any additional members of this stakeholder group that would like to submit any comments, even just a couple of lines, one or two lines, a short email to express some concern about these proposals, I think would be particularly helpful. The initial comment period ends today, but the reply comment period goes until the 5th of February. So there is still time. Anybody?
Can I ask a question? I was wondering if any of our counselors had anything they wanted to discuss on this, or anything we could, you know, help them with background or anything before they go into the discussion.
Right, because this is on their agenda for Thursday, and they need to figure out how are they gonna respond to the straw man as a council. So, you know, I think counselors, you've heard from us what we think. What do you think, and how do you plan to proceed on Thursday?
That's a good question. We've already seen Brian Winterfeld, I think, on the council list trying to really quite misrepresent the process. He's been saying, everyone's hearing me, right?
Yes.
He's saying that, you know, he's disappointed to see people going back on stuff that they'd agreed to at the meeting and stuff like this, which is a total misrepresentation of the process. The only thing, and of course it should that come up, we want to make that pretty clear, that none of this has in fact been agreed to by anybody. It's just a proposal being floated, and we have yet to even decide if it's going to enter discussion at all as a council. I think we are getting a lot of support from that, from Mason Cole, so it's definitely not just going to be us who are going to be putting up some resistance there. So, I think we're going to try and... I suspect discussion will be at the very basic level of by what mechanism do they even plan to officially introduce this policy into the GNSO? As far as we're concerned, it's just discussion that's floating around that has no...
Okay, thank you very much. So you don't see this coalescing into a motion on these proposals anytime soon?
Well, I don't think on a successful one, no. The indications are the contracted parties' house are not thrilled about it either. So,
yeah.
If they put a motion forward at this stage, it would get pretty much...
It would lose.
I feel meet with a good reception. So.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to get in the queue on this issue? Okay. I also noticed as part of the council's discussion on this topic Thursday, in the council agenda, it says related to this discussion is the staff briefing paper to the council on the topic of defensive registrations at the second level.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I'm just seeing it now for the first time myself. So apparently council is going to discuss this briefing paper on defensive registrations at the second level. I've linked to it in the agenda for today if folks want to take a look at this briefing paper.
Wow. Has anybody read it? Does anybody know what's in it? That's
my question exactly, because I'm just seeing it now for the first time. Any counselors or anyone else read this paper that's up for council discussion on Thursday?
Hi, it's Maria. Just to say I've joined the call and know that paper is news to me.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe somebody can take a look at it and we can come back to it in a little while. Because I think we should at least take a look at it and have some idea of how to respond to it before Thursday's call. And it did seem to, like, this just sort of came out of nowhere, was added to the straw man topic, which has been on the
You said the link was in the draft discussion agenda?
The discussion agenda, I'm not sure about the draft, but it's in the one that I sent out last night and this morning. Like, just as this call was starting, I resent out the agenda to the whole list, and so that's the email that I'm looking at.
Okay, I don't see it. Sorry.
It's okay. I'll forward it to you right now.
Okay. For what it's worth, guys, blocking is the one thing that's been the huge, huge, huge thing that we've fought since 2008. David's first meeting in Sydney and others.
Hello?
Hello. Is everyone back? I think we had some feedback on the line there. Sorry about that, Kathy.
Blocking's just out of the question. It's not consistent with anything in trademark law. You're never allowed to keep someone ahead of time from using a trademark term because they could be using it in a different category of goods and services or for completely non-commercial use whatsoever, not a trademark use. You never get to stop a potential competitor or a potential critiquer, or just somebody using a basic word from using it until you can prove infringement, which means that there has to be use. You're not allowed to stop them up front. So Fox would love to stop everyone from using the word Fox up front unless they clear it. And the answer is no. Sorry. It's always been no.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to add to that clearing it, not only is it wrong for many reasons, it becomes another backdoor licensing methodology. So it's not only, you know, them trying to be overly restrictive about marks, it's also them trying to open up new avenues for licensing revenues.
Good point.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Okay, thanks, guys. Anything else anyone wants to add on these trademark issues? Okay, then let's move on to the next issue, which is the GNSO response to the GAC letter. The GAC has sent a letter to the GNSO Council with regard to the initiation of a PDP on the IGO-NGO issue, which is the issue of special privileges for intergovernmental organizations and non-governmental organizations, the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee type organizations. Special privileges for those groups. And so the GAC sent a letter to the GNSO Council expressing dismay for why is the GNSO Council trying to do a PDP on something? This is the GAC said they want it. It should just be done. So that was the gist of what the GAC's letter said. And so now the GNSO needs to respond to the GAC's letter. And I'd like to see how our counselors want to handle this on Thursday. What kind of responses are we going to suggest we take to the meeting?
This is Wolfgang. Also, you know, I have to apologize that I was rather late in the call, though I'm here now for a couple of minutes. So I had always, and I expressed it several times also in previous calls, my problem with the GAC advice and the role they take it for granted that the Red Cross and the International Olympic Committee have this special status, and it's not, there is no need for a policy. It's just implementation, and I would argue also in the GNSO Council that we take note of the GAC letter, but this will not have any direct effect to our discussions, which are underway now in the working group, and there's another telephone conference tomorrow. when we try to figure out, you know, what is our approach to a policy with regard to the protection of special names from intergovernmental organizations and non-governmental organizations. You know, I think one element of the letter was helpful, that the GAC says, okay, for intergovernmental organizations, they refer to the .int registration criteria. I think this is a good idea, because what we have discussed also in the IGO-NGO working group was that it's not up to this group to decide what intergovernmental organization or non-governmental organization is. We should agree on a certain list, and we would then, you know, say, okay, this list has an own policy, and we just use this list, as John Postel did with the ISO 3166 list. And remember his famous argument when he said, you know, we are not in a position to decide what the country is. And so we go to the International Standardization Organization, and they have a procedure which country names come on the ISO 3166 list. And I think with the .int criteria, which are, you know, accessible, open, transparent, I think this would settle a lot of the problems for the intergovernmental organizations. But neither the IOC nor the Red Cross is an intergovernmental organization, so that is a non-governmental organization, and this is much more complicated. So, and I still believe we have to have a policy. We take note from the advice from the Governmental Advisory Committee, that the argument has been repeated in this letter, but I'm not ready, you know, just to say, okay, yes, sir, or yes, Susan, we have to follow your orders. So this is an advice, and we take note of the advice, and then we develop our policies. This is my proposal that how we should approach this issue.
Hi, this is Aubrey. If I can follow up.
Please.
I agree with Wolfgang completely on this. I mean, and I think we have allies on this one. I think, you know, registries such as Jeff and others, you know, while we may, and we may even find allies, I doubt, I mean, you know, I guess that word is difficult when referring to CSG, but we may even find allies there in the notion that people can tell, you know, the rest of ICANN, that the GAC can tell the rest of ICANN, sorry, nothing for you to do here, move along now. We've already decided. I mean, I think on almost everyone's notion, that goes too far in terms of their role of advice. So I agree we should, you know, thank them very much. We realize that's what you think, but, you know, we make the policy, not you, so hang in. You know, and also I think the GNSO should once again reiterate, I think the only thing I would add is once again reiterate the fact that all of these discussions are open, that, you know, they and their representatives and so on can participate in the process, you know, and bring this point of view along with them if that's really what they wish to do, you know, but sorry. You know, the policy development process, they have a role in it, but they do not determine it. Thanks. I see no hands in the Adobe. I don't know if you're looking at the Adobe, Robin, but...
No, I can't see it, so...
You can't see it. So I will let you know if there are hands there. There are none.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah, I if I can jump in here, I agree with both of those comments, and, you know, I think that we should remind the GAC that, you know, a lot of these governments, the United States government and other governments, just stood up in WCCID and talked about how great the multi-stakeholder ICANN model is, and they support the ICANN model. So I think, you know, we need to hold their feet to the fire a little bit on this and say that means you have to play by these rules, and you don't get to dominate, and you don't get to be, you know, the most important voice of all voices, that you have to sort of take a role, and it isn't a significant role, but it is just a role among several stakeholders, and they're all important, and sort of play along by those rules. And so, you know, I think we have to sort of push back on the GAC on this. I think it's really important for protecting the private sector-led multi-stakeholder model, which you know, a lot of these countries said they support, but then when they show up at ICANN, they try to do things like this, which actually puts the governments in control. So, you know, let's push back on this. That's my view. Anyone else want to get in the queue on this?
David, if I can just
please
jump. Yeah, I'm pretty much agreeing. I agree with everything that's been said. I just want to say that there has been a lot of discussion of, you know, the initial response has been discussed a fair bit on the council list, and there doesn't seem to be anyone who is really pushing for us to, you know, who wants to give in to the GAC on this. Everyone seems to be fairly reasonably strong on the whole point that, no, the GNSO makes policy. Few people have wanted to drag in the sort of policy versus implementation thing, which seems to be the GAC sort of view, like they've already made the policy, now it's just implementation, why are we even involved? But I think on the whole, people are realizing that the problem's intrinsic in that too. So, but that may get dragged into this discussion. But generally, everyone is of the opinion that yes, the GAC does not make policy, and what they have done so far is not actually policy on this issue. It's more of a general directive. Policy needs far more detail than directing aid.
Okay, thanks. Couple things. One is we've had a request on the Adobe that people state their names when they speak, and Maria has her hand up.
Okay, Maria. Maria, are you there?
Yeah, can you speak? Oh, sorry. Can I?
Yep. There you go.
Weird, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, sorry about that. Some weird Skype thing. I guess it was just really a question about tactics. There's not a huge amount of support on the council for acquiescing to what the GAC has requested. So I think a lot of the discussion will be what step the GNSO should take. So my question on tactics really is there any particular guidance on how much we want to be at the forefront of this, or, you know, do we want to just say our piece and hold our fire for the other issues, particularly the trademark clearinghouse that we're worried about?
Well, I can tell you what I think personally. I mean, I think this is an important issue and worth pushing back on significantly. But I also think that as others have said, we're not going to be alone, and so I don't think we really need to worry about being, you know, the leader or the out in the forefront or on this. I think we'll find there's quite a chorus of participants in the GNSO who are concerned about this sort of creeping power from GAC. So I think we do want to be strong on this issue, but I don't think that we need to necessarily be the, I don't think we'll be the only ones, is what I'm saying. I don't know, others probably can add something different.
This is Avery again. I agree. I think we can be part of the mob on this, but I do think we should speak. I think our council members should speak up supporting it when it does come up, you know, supporting this position, but I think we can be part of the group on this one.
This is Wolfgang. You know, I see this, by the way, as a very interesting case which has a special meaning for the general relationship between the GAC, the board, and the GNSO council about the right who has the last word. And as somebody has earlier said, you know, or Robin has made this point, the acceptance of the multi-stakeholder model for policy development. I think if the multi-stakeholder model means that finally, you know, one side, and this is the government, you know, has the final word, then this is not multi-stakeholderism as we understand it. And insofar, you know, this is a very good example, so it's not really so important. So because, you know, I think everybody will survive and the DNS will survive if we have no agreement on this for a couple of months or even for 1 or 2 years. But, you know, this is really a very good example to, you know, clarify, you know, what is, you know, how the multi-stakeholder policy, bottom-up policy development works in reality. And when the GAC came out in, from the Toronto communique with the early engagement, then we could offer them and say, okay, you have a different opinion, please engage at early time in this PDP. So you are not excluded. Do not wait until a result comes out from the PDP and become engaged. And I think this early engagement should be our answer if we move forward with the PDP for the NGOs and IGOs, that we make probably write a letter back to the GAC and say, okay, now we move forward and, you know, join the group and be engaged.
Yes, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to get in the queue on this point?
There are no hands in the Adobe room.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I think that this issue is really also tied to the next issue as well, this issue of policy versus implementation, which some other folks have already raised. And perhaps not coincidentally, both issues are on the GNSO's agenda, prompted by letters from the GAC. And so I think, you know, why these are so important and why these, or I see these sort of tied together, is because this is about efforts to try to remove policymaking from the GNSO and put it in other places, put it in the GAC or put it in the hands of staff. When we talk about the second issue, this policy versus implementation, that's important because staff of ICANN has enormous latitude to details and technical details and try to implement the policies that have come from, supposedly come from, this bottom-up process. So to the extent that an issue is labeled a policy issue, it must come from a bottom-up, community-driven process, multi-stakeholder process. And to the extent that an issue is an implementation detail, arguably staff can do as it pleases, and GAC in this case is saying staff can do these things because it wants staff to do these things, which are in fact counter to what the GNSO came up with. So again, I see both of these issues tied together because they're about pulling power away from the GNSO and into staff's hands, into the GAC's hands, and so I personally, I think that these are very important issues, and we do need to hold the GNSO needs to stand up for itself, if you will, in this case, and say, you know, no, this is about ICANN is about community-driven, multi-stakeholder policy, and that means that it's got to come from the community, and we can't simply an issue implementation detail just because we want to change it. And there have been some concerns that has happened in some of the recent proposals put out by staff or others that, you know, just by labeling something, oh, this is just an implementation detail so we can do it, there's been a lot of concern that we need a clearer understanding within the community, a clearer guideline for when an issue comes up, for already having some framework for analyzing, is this a policy issue that must go to the GNSO, or is this an implementation detail that we can leave for staff to resolve? And so staff came up with a briefing paper that they've drafted to try to kick off a discussion on this particular issue, and I think this is an issue that we're going to see a lot of discussion of in the growing months. I think it was Bill that requested that this be an issue that's discussed in Beijing in one of the ICANN forums, and I think that's a good idea, a very good idea to have a discussion on that, on this issue in Beijing like that. So that's just sort of my quick and dirty on this issue, but I want to open it up and see what others have to say on this point.
Now, this is Wolfgang again. You know, it's more or less, you know, as a similar test here, as I said in my previous intervention, that this is a good example, you know, about this muscle flexing between different groups, you know, who says what. And the problem here, what I see is, and this is in the executive summary, that they recognize that it's rather difficult to define a clear line what is a policy and what is where implementation is needed. And in so far, we should really, have in another environment, probably a very special brainstorming, probably in the Beijing meeting, because this will be on the agenda for a couple of months, that we create our own position, because this is a very basic conceptual approach. And my understanding is that some groups want to differentiate policy from implementation. Then they declare a certain issue. This is just implementation, and then they can exclude, this multi-stakeholder bottom-up discussion process. And so far, there is, if you are too flexible, with accepting to put issues into the basket of implementation, then you will lose a lot of opportunities really to develop policies, because, and the question is who decides, what is implementation, what is policy? So there's much more behind this issue. I have not really analyzed very seriously the whole paper, but I went through it. And the first thing, which came to my mind was, okay, who makes the decision? How you can really fix the criteria? And I think the paper recognizes that was a difficult to have a clear cut, this is a policy and this is implementation. But it is an issue, and I see it as a trap that some people say, okay, this is implementation and should not go to the various bodies and the constituencies. This is just for the staff or, for whoever wants to make a decision. And so far, I just want to flag this as an important issue for further discussion and analysis.
You have Maria with her hand up.
Thanks, Maria. Yes, thank you, Robin. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so just following on from what Wolfgang has been saying, clearly the problem, there are two problems here, and what Robin is saying, one of the problems is a drive to push more things into implementation, and so that, and they're into the GAC and into the staff. And the second problem I think we have is not simply that more stuff is taken out of the council, which we need to be vocal about, but also the problem is that the decision-making around implementation issues is completely untransparent, because it sort of goes into the black box of the staff, and then the decision comes out, and then we have to, see, well, do we think it was fair, or are there the hands of more aggressive lobbying on the decisions? So one of the things that has occurred to me on reading the paper is that we perhaps should make something like a counter-proposal, which is that, yes, this is all very interesting, and clearly there are problems with deciding when something is implementation, but if something is decided to be implementation, should there not be a process by which staff should register and report on outreach to them by people in the community on implementation issues, and information given to them, basically a register of lobbying interests when something is put into implementation, so that there's a proper record of who has actually been involved in decisions when they're implementation. Certainly in the UK and in the European Union, there's a big drive for all contacts that parliamentarians have with lobbyists to be made public, and I think there's a very strong case for doing that here.
That's a good example. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right.
And I think this proposal has the value of, well, I mean, I make it sincerely, although I think tactically it probably will be very annoying to a lot of people, but I think it's a sincere proposal.
David Cate has his name up. I love the proposal.
Yes, me too. David, please, go ahead. David, are you there? I can't quite hear it. Hello?
David?
Can you hear me now?
Yep. Now I can hear you.
Okay, sorry. Failing to understand mute on my fancy new headset. When we spoke about, Fadi sort of brought this issue up in Toronto, and he was really saying that, you know, presenting it a completely different way in the sense of we actually need to work out how to integrate the policy process, sort of work out what to do when policy issues come back later, and not necessarily to mean that it was taken away from the policy, but we need to find some way to sort of, you know, when policy questions arise later in the process, we need to find some way to settle them that essentially goes back to the original policy rather than just having staff run away and do it. I mean, I think there's a lot of ways to present this issue. I don't think the whole idea that because something is, you know, further down the track towards implementation, that the original authors of the policy have no say in policy decisions that come up, I think is one that we can sort of transparently, I think is one that we should strongly resist. This whole idea of policy implementation has sort of been blown up as an excuse to get things essentially out of the hands of council and working groups, and we should resist it as strongly as possible.
Yeah.
That's it.
Anyone else want to get on the queue with that? No one? Okay. Okay, so we can move on to the next issue, ATRT2 developments. Okay, so the call for applicants to serve on the next Accountability and Transparency Review Team has been extended until yesterday, it looks like. That deadline should have passed, and there were a number of applicants, at least two from NCSG. Maybe we have a counselor on the call or somebody who can walk us through the process by which the GNSO Council will endorse its applicants, because my understanding is there's going to be four and each stakeholder group gets to endorse one, but that's just, you know, could somebody walk me through how that process is going to work?
This is David. My understanding is that I think they'll be hoping our stakeholder group gives them one.
Okay, so each stakeholder group comes up with one recommendation that it gives to the GNSO, and then the GNSO passes that along as their four recommendations. Is that right, from the four stakeholder groups? One from each?
Yeah, I think the GNSO has four seats in the ATRT, and this would... But my memory tells me this, that there is no rules how the four seats are distributed among the various constituencies. So I think it's different from the NOMCOM, where you know, the constituencies have a permanent seat, but I think it's not so clearly regulated in the ITRs, if I remember correctly. Probably somebody can correct me. But it's just said that the GNSO Council can send four members to the team. So, and it would be very logical that both houses get one seat, and then you know, we have to have one seat for the non-commercial stakeholder group.
Yeah, my vague memory from the first ATRT was that each stakeholder group got to send a person to sit on that team. And so I was expecting that's how it's going to be again. But, you know, I think there's really no hard and fast rule. And so if there's been any discussions on that or any new information as to how that process will be worked out, that would be helpful. So I think it's a pretty tight deadline that the GNSO has to send its recommendations. Does anyone know anything more on this?
David again. I think they had, I mean, previously there was a sort of statement there's a whole process for GNSO endorsement that had to be included in the
David, you're really hard to hear, and people on Adobe keep saying that. So if you could speak louder, it would help.
Okay. The Adobe, my understanding is the whole process on the of GNSO, seeking GNSO endorsement that's been in place for previous review teams, and that will, you know, that's basically going to continue, is my understanding.
Okay, so I think February 15th is the selection of the teams. Okay, so I guess NCSG, then we have to come up with a process by which we pick a recommended candidate, if we can just boil this down. Yes, and
that's how it worked in the past.
Okay, and so I think we have at least two members who have expressed interest and support from NCSG and have applied. That's Avery and Marie Laurie. And so we need, correct me if I'm wrong, we need to come up with a process by which we, as NCSG, make a recommendation for a single candidate. Anyone have a different understanding?
I think this would make our life much more easier if we can lobby for one candidate from our group.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I think that's the way it's supposed to work. But again, there hasn't been anything really clearly said on this, and this is just my memory for what happened last time a couple of years ago. So maybe we should have like we did for the GNSO chair, when we were trying to come up with a recommendation for the GNSO chair position, and there were several candidates from the GNSO who were looking for NCSG support. We organized a call with those candidates who were looking for our support, and any members could use that opportunity to hear from the candidate about themselves and how they saw their role in this position and what they'd like to do in this position, and answer any questions that they might have from the members about this position and or their experience and expertise and interest in filling this position. So that's one possibility for getting started, at least within our group, for how we can come up with a process to have a single recommendation. Are there any thoughts on that or any alternative suggestions for what we can do internally?
Robin, it's Maria. Just
yes.
To say, yeah, I would support that. I think it's a really good approach to give everybody a hearing, or the two candidates, I think, that we would have a hearing. I guess the only question is can we manage it within the time frame?
Right. I'm trying to find. Okay, I think we've got basically 2 weeks. I think the SOs have to declare their endorsements by January 28th. So I think that means, you know, the GNSO has to say who they would want by the 28th, which means we would need to tell them who the NCSG candidate would be, you know, by the 27th or something, or early in the day of the 28th. So I guess we have about 2 weeks to come up with a candidate. So I think we can do that. If we've only got two possible candidates at this point in time, I think just scheduling two, you know, half-hour calls to give each one a hearing would probably be manageable.
Yep.
What do other things think?
As one of those two, I don't have that many opinions, but one call with two half-hour slots might also be a possibility.
Right, the same, yeah, 1 hour, and just give each one half an hour.
Or to even interview both of them kind of together.
Mm-hmm.
Any number of ways you could do it to them.
How about a dunk tank? Just kidding.
Trial by fire.
those are some good suggestions, too. Anyone have any preference for any of these? I think they're all good ideas.
Maybe it's Maria again. Maybe we let both people give a quick opening statement, and then I guess throw it open to some questions, and we can circulate them on the list just so people can be prepared and we have something to ask.
That's a great idea. Okay. Anyone else? I think we should. I think that's a good path forward. Okay. So let's proceed in that direction. I'll follow up with our candidates and trying to schedule a time where we can interview them and move forward on this. Thank you all. Anyone else on this, or shall we move on? Okay, let's move on. We've got the Who is Privacy and Proxy Relay and Reveal study at the Toronto meeting. So, let's see, somebody presented the results of a survey that evaluated the feasibility of conducting a future in-depth study into communication relay and identity reveal requests sent for GTLD domains registered using proxy and privacy services. The council should consider whether to go ahead with the study. So it looks like the issue before the council is whether or not they want to commission this study on relay and identity reveal requests and proxy and privacy services. Does anyone have any opinions on this or looked into this in any detail? Can provide us with any more information on this?
Robin, I probably do. This is Kathy.
Yes, please.
Okay. There are two terms that are involved with proxy and privacy. One is reveal and one is relay. And this study sounds like it's the reveal study, right? No mention of relay, right? Is that right, Robin?
Well, I think I see relay and reveal requests
okay. Here.
Might be both.
Okay. In that case, it may be the study that we drafted some time ago when I was still at .org. I worked with Margie and some others, and Don Blumenthal and some others. We hear a lot of stories, particularly from the IPC guys, that proxy privacy providers don't cooperate with them. And then you talk to the proxy privacy providers, many of whom are registrars, and they say, well, the request wasn't consistent with our laws. And there's no consistent data on this. Are proxy privacy providers merely being arbitrary and not turning over data when they should, or are intellectual property owners being jerks and asking for too much data too early in the process so that they can harass and intimidate people before there is actually any proof of a claim? So one of the questions is relay. Are proxy privacy providers passing on information, particularly legal information, to domain name registrants? The reason why this is important is if there's a legal action, the registrant should certainly know about it. But also if there's a cease and desist letter, if there's a request to buy a domain name, all of this should go onto the registrant. But the registrant should be allowed to determine whether they want to respond or not. If somebody wants to buy my domain name and I'm not selling, it's good to know, but I don't have to respond. Similarly with the cease and desist letter, although the attorneys that we talk to seem to forget this, there's no legal obligation to respond to a cease and desist letter. You want to know about it, and you want to be ready for it, and you want to respond if you want to, but there's no legal obligation to respond. So the question is the information getting to the registrant? And as representatives of non-commercial registrants here, I think that's a very important question. I'd love to know if they're getting the legal information. Then the reveal information is, when are we revealing who the registrants are? And I'd really like to see that coming up to some kind of legal standard. But at least before we create any kind of accreditation or best practices, it would be really helpful if the proxy privacy providers will even tell us to know when they're revealing their data and under what, what their national laws tell them. So this is about information, guys, because there's even having done this for 10 years now, there's virtually no information about proxy privacy provider practices. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kathy. So do you think then this would be a good thing for us to study, or do you think it could be ultimately a trap and still something we should avoid?
I think we have to study it, although I haven't looked at what's exactly up. I know we've had studies that have come back in that have been done. I'm not sure why this one got held up for as long as it did. But ultimately, we got to have some data on this. whether it's in our favor or not, I think we need data.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to be pushed to create proxy privacy practices or actual rules. Accreditation is part of the RAA.
Yeah.
Better to know than not to know what's going on, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess we just want to make sure that the way that the survey and the questions are crafted, you know, it's not in such a way to return a particular result that you know, the IC and the staff are hoping to return. So I think I see what you're, I see your point that we need to do this. I'm just saying let's watch very carefully the formulations of the study and you know, really look and try to maybe help provide some guidance in term for the formulators of the study.
Well, perhaps ask who drafted the study.
Mm-hmm.
And if it goes back to the group that I worked on, we worked really hard to make a balance. In fact, we actually went in throughout the old version and said, "This is terrible. You're fixated on a result," and we made it much more neutral. But the question is, which version is up before us? And I don't know.
Right.
Sorry, I haven't looked into that one. But if lots of good questions are asked, then hopefully we'll know the answer.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Anyone else on this issue, the Who Is issue? Is Wendy on the call? Or in Adobe, maybe?
This is Wolfgang. May I make a short comment on the risk issue, because this is very linked to the privacy discussion in Europe, and I don't know how people are familiar with this, that, you know, the coming months will, you know, see a lot of very, very hot debate about the new privacy directive of the European Union. There is a new draft coming out from the European Parliament, which has much stronger data protection mechanisms. And if you remember in Toronto the debate about the nature of the letter of the Article 29 working group, which was more or less watered down by the U.S. and saying, okay, this is a body which has no legal status and we can ignore it. And then Linda from the European Commission, she was new in the GAC, you know, made a mistake and just said, okay, yeah, the Article 29 working group is not an intergovernmental body. It's not a European Council. So that means if the European Council goes forward with this new directive, so then this becomes legally binding. And this will change to a high degree the political environment for the whole risk debate in ICANN, because then we are back on the issue where we had this, what we discussed in Toronto, that we say, okay, if this is, as it was said in the Article 29 Working Group letter, then, you know, we have different rules for the registrars, and then people with a higher standard in Europe would offer a different set of privacy protection than in the U.S., and the U.S. was very against it because they realized that it could be, you know, affect the competition between European and American registrars. So I just wanted to raise this issue and to broaden the horizon that the risk debate is very deeply linked to the broader political debate, which is still underway in Europe and will influence certainly the debate also at ICANN probably not yet in Beijing, but certainly in Durban and in particular in Buenos Aires when the deal is done in Europe.
Thank you very much for that. Was there anyone else who wanted to get on the queue on this issue? All righty, not hearing anything. Let's move on to the next issue on the agenda. We'll move over to the non-council meeting discussion issues. I think we've covered how we'll go forward on Thursday's council meeting so we can move over to the non-council meeting discussion issues. And the first one is the meeting of the non-contracted party house. It's the intersessional meeting between the CSG, the commercial stakeholder group, and the non-commercial stakeholder group on 29 and 30 January in Los Angeles at ICANN headquarters. And ICANN is providing the travel participation, travel support for a number of the non-commercial participants and the commercial participants, but there's also remote participation available. There will be available for all members. So even if you're not able to come to Los Angeles to participate in person at this meeting, you can still dial in and do the Adobe Connect, and there will be those kinds of participation facilities available as well, and we'll be sure to get transcripts and recordings of all meetings. And again, this is a two-day meeting where we'll have some briefings from ICANN staff on issues like the registrar agreement amendment negotiations and who is development and Fadi Shahadi, the new CEO, will give us a lunchtime talk, I think, one of the days. And there's some discussion of doing an outreach event, I think the night of the 29th, the first night of the meeting. So, again, not a lot of these plans are really set in stone. ICANN staff holds the drafting pen with respect to the agenda and such, and there's a bit of push and pull back and forth between all the participants, having different ideas for how they want to spend the time and different issues that they want to talk about. And so it's, frankly, not really set in stone, and we're hoping to get something a little bit more concrete back from staff in the next few days so we can plan our own participation a little bit more effectively. But that was just sort of the overview of what this meeting is about. Let me open it up for any comments. I know a number of people have been thinking about this meeting and our participation at it, so let me just stop there and open it up, get a queue going. Anyone?
No hands in the Adobe.
Yeah, this is Wolfgang again. You know, on what we discussed earlier on the other list was what is the purpose of this meeting? And some people said, okay, is it that we should bring our house in order, you know, that we should build bridges to the business constituency? Some people said, okay, you know, there's a sandbox, and now we are, you know, trying to find who does the best, you know, playing in the sandbox. So is it just for lobbying? Is it just, you know, for bringing the house in order? You know, what I said also on the list is, you know, we should have probably a double strategy. Certainly, if the business constituency wants to use the meeting to lobby these staff and for their priorities, so we have to identify, you know, two or three short-term priorities where we have also to lobby the staff. So, and to say, okay, this is, you know, in all the coffee breaks or whatever, and say, here we, these are our priorities, and we want to see that this is taken into concern, you know, in further processes. So on the other hand, you know, certainly we should use the meeting to think a little bit out of the box. The next GNSO review is approaching, and probably we use this also to, you know, introduce already some ideas, you know, how reformed GNSO could work, you know, whether we should really work towards a better organized house, you know, with clearer relationships among the commercial and non-commercial stakeholder groups. And I think the discussion on the vice chair position is here a good starter, that we can say, okay, we are really perplexed that we see this resistance by the commercial stakeholder group. And, you know, please help us to find rules, you know, which are fair rules, so that we are treated as equals and not, you know, that the business constituencies and the trademark owners, you know, determine, you know, what the policy of the house is. So, and in so far, you know, to it would be very helpful for the people who go to Los Angeles to get additional input what the priorities, the short-term priorities should be, and, you know, what in the midterm strategy are our visions and aims, what is realistic to achieve. This is my request. Thank you.
Hi, this is Aubrey. I'd like to add some stuff. There are no hands in the Adobe yet, but I'd like to make my own comment.
Please go ahead.
First of all, I sort of insist that we remember that houses are merely counting fantasies. Houses do not exist. Houses are just things that were... It's a name that was created to reflect the notion that voting is split in two halves in the complex formula that we have for the GNSO these days. I certainly don't want to spend any time trying to get the houses in order, because I believe the houses and the whole notion doesn't exist and should be eliminated from our vocabulary. And if it takes a reorganization to do it, that's what it's going to take. But houses are a really bad idea, dividing things into two. So the whole notion of getting houses in order is something I very much object to and expect to make personal statements along those lines the whole time I'm in L.A. In terms of the NCSG and the CSG as two stakeholder groups among many, learning to talk to each other more, learning to cooperate more, I think just being in the same hotel for 2 days and having drinking and eating and talking opportunities, that's definitely what we should be doing. We have very different agendas. We need to find the places where the agendas of the two stakeholder groups overlap and so on. And on the vice chair issue that's still sort of pending from this really bad idea of having a counting fantasy given a task. And the reason it can't do a task is because there's no rules that determine it. And as opposed to determining rules, I say we get rid of it. I understand that it is our right to have an election. It is our right to have Wendy voted on so that they can all vote as a block and vote her down and take us back to ground zero where we don't know what to do next. So I'm all for, you know, continuing to make the claim of our rights, but understand that we're acquiescing to Wu staying the vice chair for the rest of this year, because the only thing we can do is make things worse. We can insist on Wendy being voted on, or we could just say, this is nonsense. You guys just do not live up to your agreements. The hell with you. Keep Wu. We don't care. Something to that effect. Because at this point, I think it's just too much energy thrown into a fire that's better used to burn down the house. Thanks.
Do you want to burn down the house?
The houses should not exist.
Okay.
The fact that we've had counting abstractions used to create yet another entity in the hierarchy is incredible bogosity. That yes, I want to burn down the house.
Sorry, Avi, may I ask a question? It was under your leadership in the GNSO Council when the houses. The idea of the houses was introduced and it was established. Where this idea came from?
It came out of, there had been a proposal that was the 4x4 plus 3, which meant 4 stakeholder groups with 4 representatives each and 3 NCAs. And lo and behold, several people objected to it. So a committee of 6 was put together. 6 plus 1, which was one representative from each of the constituencies to go into a cave for a month and come out with a consensus proposal. The consensus proposal that came out from here that was invented primarily by John Nevitt but strongly endorsed by our very own Milton came out as the consensus proposal. There was only one dissenting vote and that was mine, strangely enough, but that didn't matter to the consensus, where I argued that it was a really, really bad idea to do double the remedy, divide things in half twice and expect it to work, that it was way too complicated, but that I would acquiesce to it given that we came under review again in 3 years, and if it turned out to be a bad idea, we could burn down the house. And so I'm basically calling in the option of my negative statement at the time to say, we tried it, it's stupid, let's get rid of it. I could find the report. There is a report that was written by Rob on this whole one-month special committee of six plus one, the plus one having been Alan from ALAC, but you all probably could have guessed that. So I don't know where that report is, but there is such a report, and I'm sure we could find it.
Great. Thanks so much for that history on that. Actually, that was...
That's why you keep me around.
That and to run Adobe. Just kidding. Somebody had mentioned earlier, I think, maybe it wasn't on this call, but it was the possibility of having a little bit of a planning meeting, maybe next week, amongst the participants of the LA meeting. We could maybe get on the phone and put the agenda in a little bit more detail and try to focus in a little bit more on where our key objectives going into LA and you know, what do we realistically think we can achieve and what are the talking points we want to just continue to hammer through while we're there. So does anyone have any view on whether or not that would be useful if we did maybe a call next week to prepare for LA specifically? Anyone have any thoughts on that?
Oh, I have.
Robin, it's Maria.
Yes, go ahead.
I just saw a message on an email from, I think it was Mary Wong, suggesting that we go through, ideally on a call next week, but that we go through all of the different agenda items of the Los Angeles meetings and prepare, look at what we actually want to get out of each item, and basically prepare ourselves in advance. I think that would be a great thing to do, and perhaps using the existing agenda as a guide.
Go through the agenda that Rob sent out on the 4th on this call, or go through the agenda next week.
Sorry, I should have been clear. I mean next week. I think we should have a call next week, a dedicated call, and that the starting point could be the agenda. Also, I think we should probably look at, you know, on a broader level, what we want to get out of the meeting. But I thought Mary's suggestion was just really concrete. Let's look at what we can get out of the specific sessions as well.
Yeah, that's really what I'm trying to get at. So it sounds like folks are in agreement that a call next week would be helpful to go through that. Okay. Any other views? All right, not hearing any. I will try to schedule things next week. Anyone have any quick dates they prefer or definitely can't do next week?
This is Wolfgang. I'm not available Monday, Tuesday, and Friday.
Monday or Friday, okay.
Okay, Tuesday or Friday, he said.
Tuesday or Friday. Okay.
Wednesday and Thursday.
So Wednesday and Thursday are good for you?
Yep.
Okay. All right. If anyone else has any preferences on that, please let me know as soon as possible, and we'll try to get that scheduled for next week. Okay, let's move on to the next issue, which is the consumer trust and metrics issue. And I believe we had just submitted a comment that Wendy drafted on this subject. I'm a little vague. Is there anyone else who has a clearer memory of this issue and the comment that, that Wendy drafted? Is there anything that the GNSO is going to be undertaking with respect to this issue in the coming months? Okay, not hearing anything. Okay, is there anything anyone has on this point at all, or shall we move on to the next point? Are you not hearing anything? I guess we can move on to the next issue, which is the Registrar Agreement Amendment negotiations, the RAA negotiations, which the last I had heard, and maybe there should be some new updates, the last I had heard was about a month ago, and staff pitched a press release saying there was only one point left to be negotiated from the original 11 points between the staff and the law enforcement agents who had requested a bunch of changes to the registrar agreement so they could collect information on people and survey people more easily. So is there any, has anyone heard anything further about that one remaining point and what how that would be resolved? I'm trying to remember. I think it was the reveal issue. Does anyone else have any clear understanding of what's happening in the RAA negotiations?
Are no hands. Doesn't look like anybody's following it anymore.
Yeah, it seems like nobody's following it anymore. Okay, well, I think we need to, you know, look into it and just try to understand where those negotiations are. Do we have any volunteers? Does anyone want to look into the RAA issue?
I'll go back to paying attention to it.
Pardon me?
This is Aubrey. I said I'll go back to paying attention to it.
Great. Thank you very much, Aubrey.
Great.
I'm sorry. Did somebody want to say something there? All right. Not hearing anything further. Anyone else on the RAA issue? Aubrey's going to look into it for us since we've lost track. Okay, and the only other point on the agenda that I wanted to run through today was just to remind people that ICANN offers fellowships for participation at the ICANN international meetings, three big meetings each year in different countries, and the next one will be in Beijing, although that fellowship round has closed, and then after that is Durban in the summer, and then Buenos Aires in the fall. And so if we have NCSG members who would like to attend, I think the only important criteria to consider is you have to be from a developing country. Maybe if there are some fellows, previous fellows on the call. I think Magali was a fellow. Maybe she knows more about the fellowship. And actually, she's probably the best person to talk to about the fellowship if anybody within NCSG is interested in applying. I'm going to volunteer Magali to that. You go talk to her. But again, it would be great if we could get more members, particularly new members, people who have just recently joined and want to learn more about ICANN, to apply for some of these fellowship positions. And there's information on ICANN's website, and I sent it out in the agenda and also to the NCSG G-Discuss list the other day. So the information is there, and I hope folks will apply. Anything anyone else wanted to add on that point?
Hi, Robin. This is Summer.
Yes, Summer.
Yeah, what you said is basically correct about criteria for application for the fellowship program. It used to be that you had to be from a developing country and living in that country, but I think they've canceled that second clause recently. So anyone from the developing country, according to UN standards, I think, can apply for the fellowship program. The current application round is open for the Durban meeting and will close on February 22nd, I think. So folks have about a month to apply between now and then.
Great. Thank you very much, Amr. Did you do the fellowship program before?
Yes, I did. Attended three meetings as a fellow.
Oh, wonderful. I'd forgotten about that. So you would be another great person to talk to about the fellowship experience, if anyone. Can I volunteer you?
If anyone has any questions, please, I'd be happy to answer.
Thanks so much. Anyone else want to add anything on this? Okay, that was the final issue on our agenda for the day, and we've gotten through it with about 27 minutes to spare. So any other business?
This is Aubrey. I'd like to say that it's really good how many people we actually got on Adobe this time. I think we got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. I think it's 12 of us.
Wow.
Which is really good. I'd also like to ask, we're going to try and have the Adobe with sound all the time. And as Robin said, I'm as part of my policy role this year, I'm helping with Adobe in the policy meetings. I also recommend that anybody that doesn't want to use the sound that way and needs a dial-in, to make sure that you send Robin that number at least a half hour in advance. Otherwise, I mean, the request can go out later, but it is difficult. So I just like to mention that, you know, I wanted to jump in with that. Hopefully somebody has substantive other business, but I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, thank you very much for that, and also thank you for your help with running the Adobe, and I'm sorry we didn't have sound at the beginning of this meeting's for Adobe, but I think now we understand that we need to have a standard request to have that, and so I think we can facilitate that in the future.
I see no hands.
Any other? All right. Well, I guess we can call this meeting to a close then. And let me thank you all for participating. It's great to have a good group like this, a big group. And we can take all these discussions back to the mailing list. And we've got some calls to schedule in the coming weeks as well to move our agendas forward with respect to the ATRT recommendations and also the LA meeting. So thank you all for a very good call, and we'll see you online.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Robin. Thank you.